Some of you might know the Bible well enough that you're saying, wait a second, that's not the end of the story. But we are going to continue the story after this week as Trinitarian things come in threes, godly things. And so we're going to spend 3 weeks on the prodigal son because 1 week is just not enough to contain the depths and the message of this story. And so we will continue the story next week. So please don't miss any other Sundays the rest of this month, okay? Deal? Deal. With that, will you pray with me? Lord, may the words of my mouth and may the meditation of all our hearts and minds be acceptable and pleasing to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So many moons ago, we went out to get a puppy. I really wanted a puppy. I really wanted a husky. So here a group of huskies, a litter, showed up at the shelter, and I had to run to go get them. So I ran with the intention of getting one puppy, and I fell in love with one puppy and said, I have to take this puppy home. Well, Kylie at the time was 4 years old, and Kylie fell in love with a different puppy in the litter. She said, I have to take this puppy home. Well, the guy at the shelter was very cunning. He convinced us to take both puppies. He said it would be much easier to take two than one. Yeah, I was made the fool that day, but two puppies came home. We weren't quite ready for two puppies, let alone one puppy, and hadn't prepared anything because we didn't know when in the world we would find the right puppy. Get home and come to discover that the side fence at the house had enough gap under it that a little 8-pound husky puppy could squeeze under it if they desired. So the rule became, until we could get the gate fixed, to take the puppies out and potty training them, you had to go out and watch the puppies and keep them in the backyard and not wandering down the side yard. Now, to continue this story, at the time we had roommates that were renting a room from us. And apparently, we had not communicated well enough to the roommate that the puppies could get under the side gate if you let them out and that you had to watch them. Well, second or third day that we had the puppies, the roommate got home before me. And when I got home, I came into the house and the cage that the puppies were usually in was open and no puppies. I went, okay. So I go look in the backyard. I see no puppies. And I'm like, all right, what has roommate done with the puppies? So I go upstairs and I ask the roommate, I say, where's the puppies? And I said, well, I got home and I assumed they needed to go out, so I let them out. I said, did you watch them? He goes, no. And I went, oh, no. So here we go back out to the backyard, look down the side yard, no puppies. So we head down the side yard, we go out the side gate, and here we are running around the neighborhood, yelling to these puppies, calling their name, which is about the most foolish thing, because after 2 days, Lord knows they did not know their names. But here we are yelling to them, Ash, Coda, come home! Yelling to these puppies as if these six-week-old puppies know our voices, know their names, and are just going to suddenly come running back. Well, we run all over the neighborhood, and we cannot find the puppies. And I am just heartbroken and not knowing what in the world am I going to do. How are we going to find these puppies? I've just found them. I've just fallen in love with them. I've just brought them home, and now they are gone. So back towards the house we go, back towards the side gate that we had left open, back into the backyard, back into the house. We're trying to regroup, figuring out what is the plan, what are we going to do, are we going to put up flyers, how do we get these puppies back? When all of a sudden we hear something at the front door. Did you hear something at the front door? I think there's something at the front door. Go wandering towards the front door, open the front door, and what's sitting on the front mat but both puppies? All this time, we'd been searching the neighborhood, and where had they come? But they had come back home and were waiting for us to let them in. Now, I can't blame them. They were puppies. They wanted to go out in the world. They wanted to be independent. They wanted to explore and see what was out there. And I can't blame them. I've been in the same place. Coming towards the end of high school, I could not wait for independence. I was so excited to get to college. I was going to get to make my own schedule, determine everything I ate, determine what time I go to bed. Nobody's going to be checking on me. I will be in charge of me, minus my parents paying for it all, right? But other than that, I was going to be independent. I headed off to college, and it was great. But it wasn't much more than a year into the college experience that I was enjoying the friends, I was enjoying the classes, I was enjoying it, but I longed for home. I longed for the familiar. I longed for the home-cooked meals. I longed for the familiarity. I longed for the connection and the relationships that were there. And at the time, I felt like a failure heading home. And every time I told people, yeah, I left Westmont, I came home. But now I realize there's no shame in loving your family that much, in loving home to where you want to be, in that place of safety, familiarity, and love, much like those puppies sitting on our front porch that had found home in love in our home. But we're all, at some point, a prodigal that needs that independence. Here we see it in this very familiar parable. This, the third of three that Jesus speaks of the lost parables, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son. But what happens here? He's not really lost, is he? Not in the way that I got lost trying to find my way up to Oregon. Not like I get lost almost every day here in Torrance trying to get all these numbered streets down. But lost with intentionality. One day the son walks up to his father and he tells the father, I'm ready for my inheritance, I'm going out on my own. And the interesting one, had I told my dad that, boy, he would have given me a tongue lashing. But this father doesn't question it. He doesn't say no. He doesn't tell him how disrespectful that is. But what does he do? My son, if that's what you want, I sell half the property and here you go. And since the son took all that wealth, and off he went out into the world to a distant country. It's interesting. Here he asks for his inheritance and leaves. And there's many ways that this has been interpreted of what this son was saying. And I think what this son is saying of how we interpret it from Jesus is he's saying, Creator, I'm ready for my salvation. The inheritance I get from what you have given me, but I'm going to go live away from you independently on my own. Just give me the benefit of what you've done and what you've built for me and what you've blessed me with, but I can live this life independent from you. There's many that are living that way today. Many that are accepting the salvation of Jesus that say, I accept what you did on that cross. And I'm so excited that I have confidence in what happens to me after this life. But I can live this life independent. I don't need God controlling it or telling me how to live it or the church as a part of it. But I could take the salvation and I can head out and do what I want. It's this desire for independence that's ingrained in us. I could do it myself. Comes from a young age, how early we start saying, I could do it myself. I could put my clothes on myself, even though they're backwards and upside down and nothing matches. I could feed myself, even though it's everywhere. From the beginning, we have this need for doing it ourselves. And here we see it in the prodigal. I can do it myself. I can live my own life. I don't need you controlling it and determining how it's lived. So the prodigal heads off to this distant country. But what happens? It says he gets to that country and he squanders off all his wealth, and I like how my version put it, in wild living. All of a sudden the bank account was full and all he saw was those dollar signs, and boy, he spent them because they were there. So easy to do. These days it's so easy with a credit card just to swipe. Money's there, I'll just spend it, right? But all of a sudden, you can get to that place of, oh no, I'm in trouble. That prodigal hit that place. All the money's gone, and what does it say? All the money's gone, and a famine hits. Here he gets himself down and out, and it's even worse, because it's tough times all around him. It says he found a citizen in that distant country that he could hire himself off to. And what does that citizen give him? A good Jewish boy as a job, but the job of feeding the pigs. And there's nothing wrong with feeding pigs, y'all. Nonoi recently educated us at how important our farmers are that put food on our table. It's a critical job. I love bacon. I love the pig feeders. But if you are Jewish, you aren't going anywhere near an unclean pig. But here he gets sent to do a job that at the core of his being and who he is, that he shouldn't be doing. And what makes it worse? But he's doing a job he shouldn't be doing. And he's looking at those pigs and wishing he could eat what they're eating. He's looking at those scraps. He's looking at those pods. And he is so hungry. He's jealous of a pig. And what does it say? But it says he got so hungry and there was no one willing to help him. The world wasn't going to help him. Too many times we get this world that sends this message, pick yourself up from your bootstraps. There's no such thing as a free lunch. You got to do it yourself. Nobody's going to do it for you, right? You got yourself into this mess, you're going to get yourself out of it. Here he was. No way to provide for himself. No food for his belly. Nobody that cared about him enough to help him. Have you ever been in that kind of desolate place? It just seems compounding that there doesn't seem to be anything to give us relief. Nothing that's going to pull us up out of that situation. And we look around and it just seems to be dead ends and closed doors and no's. Hasn't been that long since recession, when it was tough to get a job. No matter what education you had, no matter what experience, some people just couldn't get a job and it wasn't their fault. It was just the luck of the situation and the way things were. But this young man, he gets to that place. He gets to that place of hitting bottom. And one thing I see here, when he hits bottom, he gives his father a great compliment. Did you see it? Here he's got an owner that's paying him, that's given him nothing. He's starving. And that person isn't helping him a bit. But he says, but I know the slaves who work for my father. Not only do they have something, but it says they have more than they need. What does he say about his father? But his father takes care of those that he is responsible for. The least of these on his property, he gives more than enough. He says, my father is a good and generous man. Maybe I can go work for him, not his son. But maybe I can be his slave. And as he's heading there, he's preparing the speech. Have you been there? You got a tough phone call that you make, or you know you got a tough conversation you have to have, and so you're running through the script in your head, preparing your words. That's our way of dealing with the nerves and the fear and the anticipation as we rehearse and we practice and we get it just right. And if I get those words just right, then maybe I can repair the relationship. Maybe I can get the job. Maybe I can get what I need. Maybe I'll be successful and it won't be another slammed door or another unanswered phone call. And so here he's coming. He's ready. And he gets to the father's property and he's ready to grovel. And what does it say? But the father is there waiting, right? He's there waiting, and he sees the son coming on the property. And that son deserves no respect from that father. That son deserves nothing from him because he took everything that the father owed him. And the father owes him nothing else. But the father sees the son. And what does it say? He hikes up his tunic and he runs for his son. He runs to meet his son. And the son's all ready with his speech, but the father doesn't even need it. He's already embracing him, already loving him, already welcoming him back before the words, "I'm sorry," can even come out. Here is God at God's core. We look at God and say, "I could do this myself." We look at God and we say, "I can be independent. I can take care of me." We have our times we sin. We have our times we turn our back. We have our times that we wander away and kind of forget God. And we're ready for the "I'm sorry's." We're ready to give the speech. But guess what? We don't have to convince God to take us back. We don't have to convince God to love us. We don't have to convince God to give us grace or a second chance, because before the words could even come out of our mouth, God is already embracing us with tear-filled joy. Because that's who God is. That's who God is. A God of grace and mercy. And why grace and mercy? Max Lucado does a great job of telling us why there's both of these. He asks the questions in one of his books of what is the difference between mercy and grace. And he uses the prodigal son to answer it. And he says, mercy gave the prodigal son a second chance. Mercy gave the prodigal son a second chance. While we were just on vacation, we played a lot of cards. The kids played Pokemon. I don't play that, but boy, they love playing that. And I was teaching them all sorts of card games. And what kept coming out of Aiden's mouth when he would play Kylie is, "Give me mercy, Kylie. Give me mercy, Kylie. Can I call mercy? Where's the mercy rule, Kylie?" I said, "Aiden, do you even know what that means?" He goes, "No, but I know I'm supposed to ask for it." Mercy rule in baseball means you've gotten so far ahead that mercy means we're not going to let the team beat you up anymore, right? We're going to end the suffering and then move on and have another chance with the next game, right? Said, mercy makes me think of the brother with me in a headlock choking me. And mercy says, "I declare you're bigger than me. I need this to end," right? Mercy is that ability to say, I can't dig myself out of this. I'm the one that squandered all the money. I'm the one that walked away. I'm the one that took my inheritance and lost it all. I'm the one that lost track. I'm the one that did this to myself. And I can't undo it. It's bigger than me. And what is mercy? But mercy is a God that says over and over again, your slate is clean. You got a fresh chance. Doesn't matter what happened yesterday. You are back with me. God is a merciful God. God is a God that gives us chance after chance after chance. But then it goes on. Grace gave him a feast. Grace gave him a feast. Let's admit this. That son did not deserve a party. That son did not earn that fatted cow to be killed for him. There is nothing he did to earn that party. But the father gave it to him anyways. That is grace. Grace is God saying, you don't earn it, you don't deserve it. It's not something that you bought, but it's something I freely give you because I love you that much. We are the prodigals that wander. We are the prodigals that don't give God nearly as much as God deserves. But every time we walk into this place, every time we're in our knees in prayer, every time we come to our senses and say, I keep trying to do this myself, but I need God to help me. God, I need you to support me. God, I need you to encourage me. God, I need you to give me your Holy Spirit to move my feet because they are stuck and I can't do it. And when we seek God's help, when we seek God's guidance, when we seek God's mercy and grace, God's not ready for a lecture. God's not ready to dish out the punishment. God isn't ready to tell us what we have to do to earn it or where our low place is. But in those moments, God is throwing a party for us. Why? Because Jesus says it three times over with these parables, that when one person repents, Jesus throws a joy-filled party. He wants to throw a party for you and me. He wants to throw it each and every day. Why? Because God is a God of joy and love. And what are these parables? But these are parables of joy. Parables of a shepherd that's rejoicing because his one of 99 sheep is back. A woman who's throwing a party for all the neighbors because she found a coin. And a father that throws a party because his son, who had declared him dead, has returned home. My friends, we all have ways that we find ourselves lost. We all have our ways that we find ourselves lost. But the good news this morning is, we don't have to go looking for God. All we have to do is open our arms and allow God to embrace us and throw our very own party. Will you pray with me? God of all mercy and grace, we know that we all wander at times. We know at times we're those curious puppies that just want to go see what's out there. We know at times we're the ones that feel hurt, so we intentionally walk away. We know we have those times where we are just the stubborn human beings that have to be independent and have to do it ourselves. And sometimes in that wandering, sometimes in that walking away, sometimes in those times of frustration and hurt, we find ourselves hitting the bottom. We just pray that you will help us to remember that even if we aren't holding your hand, even if we aren't bringing you with us, that you are always there with us, that you don't wander away from us, and that you are always ready to welcome us home, to welcome us back if we will just turn back to you. If we will just come to our senses and realize that what we need most doesn't come from this world, but it comes from you. And depend on you is not weakness, but to depend on you produces a strength above this world. So may we seek to be in continual relationship with you, to be continually inviting you to be the authority in our lives, to continually seek you as the place of safety and rest in this weary and difficult world. May we continually be able to celebrate with you, to experience your joy, because we are in relationship with you. God, you are so good to us, more than we ever deserve. But that just reminds us of how amazing of a God you are. And so this morning, we thank you, praise you, and give our hearts to you. In your name, in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.